So we are here for the TAC's longitudinal client outcome study. So wasn't the one that you were seeing up there before. We've got Nina Ellis and David Gifford presenting today. Nina is a manager of the research translation at the TAC. Nina has spent over 15 years working in the market and social research industry, joining the TAC's client research team in 2004. During this time, Nina led the development of client outcomes research at the TAC and was the manager of the client research team during the development and implementation of the TAC's longitudinal study. Nina has recently moved to a property on the outskirts of Geelong and with her partner and 10-year-old daughter. She enjoys getting to know the local flora and fauna and is taking tentative steps towards living an agricultural life. David is a qualified actuary and the executive manager of the business intelligence at the Transport Accident Commission. David has a range of leadership roles at the TAC, including actuarial services, business intelligence, predictive modelling and strategy development. He has served on the General Insurance Practice Committee for 4 years and was previously Chief Examiner for General Insurance Subject 3A for several years. He is passionate about the Carlton Football Club. That's very unfortunate, David. red wine. And if his actuarial career ever falls through, he'll probably end up becoming a bad winemaker. So please join me in welcoming David and Nina.
Thank you, Nikki. Nina and I are going to share the presentation today. I'm just going to briefly start by giving a bit of context about the TAC that might or might not be familiar to people in the room. Nina will talk in more detail about our longitudinal study in terms of the design and some of the early results we're seeing. And I'll finish off just fairly briefly, just with some of what we're doing at the moment and what might come next. So just to briefly give the context about the TAC, as I said, a lot of you are probably familiar with this, and Peter Burt certainly gave us a bit of context at the plenary session there, so mostly thanks to Peter for his mostly kind words that he gave us this morning. So the TAC is Victoria's state-owned monopoly compulsory third-party insurer. We provide treatment support and compensation for our clients on a no-fault basis. Get about 16,000 claims a year. And we also, as Peter touched on this morning, we have a limited common law benefit. So a little less than 10%, around about 7% of our clients are entitled to common law damages. But so for the most part, we're a no-fault scheme, providing that lifetime care and support for those who are unfortunate enough to be injured in transport accidents. And even though it's not the topic of today's presentation, worth just mentioning briefly the role the TAC plays in accident prevention. A lot of you would probably know some of the ads that the TAC's run over the years to try to impact the level of death and serious injury on the roads in Victoria. And we also invest a lot in road infrastructure to try to have an impact as well. So in terms of, the majority of the TAC's activity, which relates to supporting our injured clients, we very broadly segment our clients into two groups. The first group we refer to as our independence clients. So these are our most severely injured. The vast majority of our independence clients have a severe traumatic brain injury or a spinal injury. Very small in number, only about 1% of a new year's worth of claims, but over 70% of our outstanding liabilities relate to our independence group. Obviously, this group that receive high levels, for the most part, of ongoing care and support, with a large number receiving attendant care benefits, many for their lifetime. By contrast, the remainder of our clients we refer to as our recovery clients. So 99% of our new claims. The minority of our outstanding liabilities, but the majority of our annual spend, around about 70%. And it goes without saying, our recovery clients have less severe physical injuries. What's important, I suppose, for what we're presenting today is that within the recovery population there's a very broad spectrum. So we have, a substantial number of clients who only receive services from the TAC for days or weeks or months, but there are a number, probably at least a couple of thousand a year within our recovery population who'll go on to receive services for a number of years. So the recovery population it's a lot more heterogeneous, I suppose it's fair to say, than the independence population. And so our longitudinal study we'll be presenting is around our recovery population. So another bit of context, I guess, is around the evolution of the TAC scheme. And again, Peter touched on a little bit of this earlier on this morning. But the TAC began in 1987, and the expression we often use is that we were born out of market failure. Our two predecessor organisations, the Motor Accident Board and the State Insurance Office, both had significant financial difficulties. So for the first 15 or so years of the TAC's existence, we were about not going broke. Having been able to do that up until the early part of the 21st century, we introduced our second headline corporate measure, client experience, or client satisfaction, as we sometimes refer to it. And so at this point in our view, we did move to having a balanced scorecard, so both a financial but also, I guess, a client or a social or a human goal alongside that. And having pretty successfully managed both financial sustainability and client experience for the next 8 or 9 years or so, achieving our corporate goals on both measures, we introduced a third corporate goal in 2009 as part of our TAC 2015 strategy. And our third corporate goal we refer to as client outcomes. I think, you know, other schemes maybe use different terms, but for us, client outcomes is what we refer to as returning our clients to health, to work, or to independence. And really that's the guts of what Nina will be talking about today. Just briefly, just to look at our history in terms of the client experience results we've been able to achieve since we've been measuring our performance. We started in 2001 with a score of around about 6.8 out of 10 and increased pretty steadily for those first 8 or 9 years that we had it as a corporate goal, up to about 7.6. Been fairly flat since then. But I suppose the reason for presenting this data, I think, is that, you know, in our view, getting a score of 7.6 out of 10 when our clients don't choose to be customers of the TAC, I think on most measures is a pretty good result. You know, we can genuinely say that we do a pretty good job of providing good service to our clients and keeping them satisfied. There's always opportunities to improve. But it's the fact that we are doing a good job and we've been able to achieve strong results in client satisfaction that's probably allowed us to broaden our focus and to adopt that third corporate measure of client outcomes. So we introduced client outcomes as a corporate goal in 2009, and since 2012 we've been measuring it using a single composite measure which we refer to as our client outcome index, which has six sub-measures sitting underneath it, which are shown here on the slide. I won't go through them now. They're covered in our paper. But just a couple of, I suppose, points around the benefit of introducing a client outcome index. I guess when we introduced it as a headline measure, we recognised it was probably an interim measure. It wasn't the final one that we'd end up with. But the fact that we've had a headline client outcome index measure, it's raised the profile within the organisation of client outcomes. And it's also, I think, helped reinforce within the staff, within the organisation, that the nature of client outcomes and probably particularly the fact that a client outcome will mean very different things to different clients. So whilst you know, we've in a sense collapsed it into these six measures, you know, I guess we've been able to recognise the complexity and the challenge of measuring and managing client outcomes, and that's certainly what Nina's going to spend more time on. So just finally, as one other important piece of context, I think when we think about what we're trying to achieve in terms of returning our clients to health and work and independence, it's really important that we recognise we're doing this, you know, that our clients exist in a community who faces many of the same challenges, you know, in terms of mental health issues, you know, which was certainly a topic in the discussion this morning, in terms of persistent pain, in terms of the multiple complexities that our clients face, you know, in recovering from an accident. This graphic here just highlights that from a national point of view, Commonwealth expenditure on mental health, nearly $10 billion, you know, and so it's really just goes to that point that, you know, the TAC in a sense is just one, in some ways, quite small player in terms of a much larger social challenge nationally. So I'll hand over to Nina, who'll now take us through more detail about our study.
Thanks, Dave. Okay, so as you've just heard, the TAC has a really strong history in measuring client satisfaction, or the client experience, as we like to refer to it. And we've been doing that over a 15-year period. And we've also implemented a program of understanding client outcomes from the client's perspective, so self-assessed returning to health and returning to work. So some of those measures that David presented in the Client Outcomes Index are derived from an annual cross-sectional survey that the TAC conducts. And that particular program of work has really greatly informed our shift or our evolution into conducting longitudinal research with our recovery branch clients. Why did we go down this path? The cross-sectional surveys that we were running serve a really important purpose for the TAC. We take a snapshot at any given point in time across our life of claim portfolio, and it enables us to really understand what the issues are right there in real time on reflection. And it also enables us to really drill down into particular areas that might be problematic and help the business understand how to improve. But what the cross-sectional studies didn't really give us was real insight into recovery pathways and how clients actually journey through to those outcomes. The cross-sectional studies are always a different cross-section of people, of TAC clients, and what we really wanted to do was follow the same group of clients over a certain period of time and fundamentally ask the same sorts of questions to try and analyse change over that period of time. So we see the longitudinal approach as really complementing our comprehensive program of cross-sectional work. So I promise that this is my most wordy slide. Just to give you the official objective of the longitudinal study, we were very keen to develop and implement a multi-cohort longitudinal research program that tracked both the experience and the outcomes of clients from their perspective as they journey through the TAC scheme on their return to health and work, where relevant, following a transport accident. Really, that boiled down to three very specific research objectives. A lot of this was actually quite exploratory. So whilst we'd had the program of annual client outcomes tracking, which had been sort of going for really a 5 or 6 year period by the time we started with the longitudinal study, there was still quite a lot that we didn't really know. We didn't really know if some of the results that we were finding through that cross-sectional survey were about different people being measured at different points in time, or whether there were some real effects going on there that were not related to the time component and, in fact, more related to the same people over time. So lots of exploration still, and also we were very keen to try and understand what the predictors of some of those outcomes were. So measuring and describing, but also attempting to try and predict the pathways that clients might take through our scheme on their journey to recovery. And ultimately, really, the real purpose of conducting the study was to determine the extent to which the TAC could actually influence those outcomes positively and negatively, but our preference obviously is to influence them positively, and perhaps also start to think about some of the principles we were understanding from our research that could actually be translated into claims management practice. So from the very beginning, we had a very pragmatic research translation remit, I guess, so that really influenced a lot of the design considerations. I'd just briefly like to explain this element of the study. So alongside the quantitative data collection, we had what we refer to as the Getting Life Back on Track video series. So we recruited a very small number of participants who were in the formal part of the study to be part of the video series element of the study, which was a face-to-face in-depth interview at the same time points as the quantitative telephone interview, where we were actually able to go into a lot more depth about some of the recovery challenges and experiences that clients were having. And this actually enabled us to create a wealth of additional information, which the TAC has used to help highlight some of the key findings from the research. So we've used some of the footage from those interviews to promote the study, to help claims staff connect with the statistics behind the study, and also to bring the numbers to life. So before we get into some of the more details, the drier details of the study, I thought it might be nice to hear from some of those clients about their challenges in terms of getting life back on track following a transport accident.
Getting my life back on track, I definitely be getting back on the bike.
I think my life will be back on track when I feel, that driving is just part of my life.
Oh, in 3 months' time, I'll be back to normal. Yeah.
Getting life back on track to me means just getting back to my own independent life.
I'd like to think, in 6 months, but realistically with what I've got, I don't think that's achievable.
In regards to the future, so there's a lot of uncertainty at the moment as to where it is from here.
Talking about getting my life back on track, I'm back where I want to be, except for my headache and my shoulder.
Getting my life back on track is getting back to work full time. That will happen within the next a month or so.
Getting my life back on track means doing all the things I took for granted before. Going down the street, taking a dog for a walk.
I feel that it's improving, so I'm hoping in a way that eventually I can say goodbye to the TAC.
I don't want to get back to how I was before. In a way, I want to get better than that.
Getting my life back on track? I'd like to say I'd like to be able to ride a motorbike again. That's probably that'll be a confidence issue, I think.
In 3 months' time, I'd like my leg to be healed and starting to go back to work.
So what do I think about getting my life back on track? Realistically, in 3 months, who knows, will I have finished my PhD? But I hope so. I hope that that's sort of in the window of time where everything is finally getting back to the step I was just about to reach just before the accident.
At that point, I would also like to thank all of the TAC clients who participated in our study. We couldn't derive any of the insight that we have from the study without their willing participation, and it never ceases to amaze me and humble me how willing people are to actually share their stories with us. Okay, so in terms of study design, we spent quite a bit of time thinking about the study, and a lot of effort went into designing an appropriate methodology. We did have our internal program of research that I've already talked about, the cross-sectional experience and outcomes tracking, and a lot of the material that we ended up translating into our longitudinal study had its origin in those two separate quantitative programs of work. We did also actually run a small-scale longitudinal study. We did a follow-up study on a cohort of clients who were willing to be recontacted after one of the annual cross-sectional studies, and that really enabled us to test the methodology in full, to introduce some new concepts that we hadn't previously examined, and to understand what some of the sensitivities might be, and to really fine-tune our thinking around developing this study. There are a couple of data registries that exist in Victoria which contain a wealth of longitudinal data already, and they were certainly instrumental in helping us inform our thinking about what the TAC might like to collect. We're very conscious that we don't over-survey our population, so we didn't want to be duplicating information, but I guess one of the primary limitations of the existing data registries in Victoria is that they only collect information on hospitalised clients, which of course is very important, but the TAC's recovery branch of clients contains a significant proportion of non-hospitalised clients, and we didn't actually have any longitudinal data on that particular cohort of our population. Nevertheless, those data registries did really inform our thinking. We had lots and lots of conversations with trusted providers in the commercial research world and also the academic research world. So we in Victoria have a partner in ISCA, which is the Institute of Safety Compensation and Recovery Research. And we had multiple conversations with our colleagues at ISCA to help us inform the thinking and fine-tune the approach, and that was really very invaluable. We also used the ICF, the International Classification of Functioning, Disability and Health Framework, which has been published by the World Health Organization. And this was really used as a framework to help us think about the sorts of content that we would like to include in the study. This framework is really bringing together the medical and the social understanding of health and looks at other aspects that could be impacting on somebody's ability to function and live well. The ICF was actually also really quite instrumental in helping the TAC design its client outcomes index as well. So we wanted to make sure all of these different domains were included in our study. We really wanted to follow our clients through the recovery, through the sort of main recovery stages. You'll see the graphic on the far side there. We wanted to have time points in our study that addressed both the acute rehab adaptation and hopefully stable phase of recovery. So we're very conscious that there were some other longitudinal studies out there that had similar time points and designed their methodology around ensuring they collected information at these crucial points in time. In the middle, you'll see the corporate goals that David has referred to, so client outcomes, client experience, and scheme viability for the TAC. We were very conscious of our corporate goal structure, I guess, in terms of informing content, so that was never far from our minds either. And we were also really very conscious to make sure that the study didn't burden clients unnecessarily. We take a very soft approach to the internal program of research that we run at the TAC. A no is a no. We are concerned about making sure our sample is representative, but we're probably less concerned about that and more concerned that the clients are, if not having a positive experience, at least a neutral experience when they're involved in research on our behalf. Okay, so I won't spend too long on this slide, but I do really like it because it summarises a vast amount of information in one single slide. So this is ultimately what we ended up with for our study. So I mentioned before it was a multi-cohort study, so we had multiple monthly intakes in order to build up a critical sort of sample size at the outset. And we also ran a pilot stream ahead of every single time point in the study. And that was really invaluable as well because it enabled us to really, really fine-tune the survey and make sure we didn't have any last-minute hiccups in terms of programming or some sensitivities that we hadn't considered. For the most part, the pilot ran very smoothly and we didn't really need to make any changes to the main study protocol. But as you can see there, we interviewed clients over a two-year period four times, and we interviewed clients at approximately 3, 6, 12 and 24 months post-accident. And those time points correspond to the previous diagram I was explaining about the key stages in terms of the recovery process. As you can see, we were really busy for quite some time early on. There were months when we were in field collecting information from clients for two different time periods. So it was quite a project management feat, not to be underestimated. And, of course, we didn't do this by ourselves. We contracted an independent research organisation who ran the data collection on our behalf with expertise in running and conducting longitudinal studies of this nature. Okay. So we started off with just over 1,500 clients at our time one interview. And we were quite pleased with our overall retention rate. We had 814 clients who participated at every single time point in the two-year study, so 52% of the original starting cohort. We did allow clients to come in and out of the study, so if they missed a particular wave, we didn't penalise them by saying, well, you missed your opportunity. We still attempted to recontact those clients at the different survey waves and invited them back into the study. We did conduct quite considerable bias analysis on both our intake, our initial starting population, and then at each subsequent time point, because obviously we're wanting to use this data to derive insight about TAC clients and their recovery trajectories and what the TAC can do to influence that. We needed to make sure our sample was representative. And there's a fair amount of detail on this in the paper, so if you're particularly interested, I will divert you to the paper for the detail of the analysis. And I've got other papers that I could share with you as well that will go into quite substantial levels of detail. But suffice to say, at this point in time, our sample was representative of the recovery population. We had a small amount of bias creeping in over time, which related to our ability to contact clients, which was related to our ability... the level of engagement that those clients had over time with the TAC. So as clients recovered and were less likely to be engaged with the TAC, they were slightly less likely to be contacted and when they were to be involved in the study. But when we attempted to correct for that bias, we found no substantial impact on our study results, and we took the decision that it was less problematic to not weight the data than weight the data, and we proceeded on the basis of unweighted data with all of our analyses to date. So, this graphic just gives you a nice snapshot of the different domains that we cover in the questionnaires of the longitudinal study over time. There's quite a lot of detail in the paper again, so I'll divert your attention to the paper if you'd like to see specifics about what we actually ask clients. And some of those domains come more obvious in the next few slides when I show you some results. But just quickly to give you an overview, at the time one interview, which was approximately 3 months post-accident, for some clients it was around about 2 months. For some clients it was sort of up to 4 months. But on average, three. And that was the earliest that the TAC's ever gone to a cohort of clients to ask them about their experiences and recovery trajectories. And in order to do that, we actually had to make a number of fundamental changes about the way we structured ourselves and our recruitment protocols. So there was a lot of sort of pre-work that went into being able to get to clients that early. So at that time, one interview, we asked clients quite a few questions about their pre-accident health and vocational status. We'd never really asked clients about their pre-accident health status before, so that was quite new territory for us. There were some demographic types of variables that we asked, which we didn't need to repeat at the subsequent time points. At the time one interview, we also asked them about their accident circumstances, their perception of their injury, in particular injury severity, and then a whole lot of different variables across those different domains at the acute phase, so psychosocial health, VOC, scheme experience and the environment that they were operating, so the healthcare practitioners that they were involved with. And then those domains were effectively repeated across the three subsequent time points. We added in some additional content at the time four interview, 24 months post-accident, that looked at any early experiences or any expectations or considerations around medico-legal type processes, so whether or not clients were in the impairment process and or considering common law. So we have some limited information about people's expectations around those different processes. Okay, so I'm just going to give you a quick taster of some of the key highlights that the study has produced, really quick. So the first slide I'd like to show you looks at pre-existing health. So there's quite a lot of information in that graph. I'll just talk for a bit while you absorb it. At the time one interview, we asked clients about pre-existing disability, so a health problem or a condition lasting 6 months or more which caused them difficulty or stopped them doing everyday activities, communicating, socialising, doing anything that people their age usually did. We also asked about pre-existing chronic conditions, so any long-term health condition confirmed by a doctor or nurse at the time of the accident that had lasted or was expected to last 6 months or more, such as asthma, arthritis, stroke, chronic back pain, depression, anxiety, etc. What we did with that data was collapse it down into four or five basic groups, and that's what we've presented to you in the Venn diagram. So I'd just like to draw your attention to the writing in the bottom left of the graphic. Of our study population, 48% reported no chronic health condition. So that means, conversely, 52% did. And that was an enormous revelation for the TAC when we saw this data coming through. We were really, really surprised by that particular result. In particular, we were concerned about the compound effect. So you might be dealing with one pre-existing chronic health condition, but a number of clients were actually dealing with more than one. So nearly a quarter of our study population had multiple pre-existing health conditions that they were dealing with, and then they had a transport accident. This graphic just really gives a bit of a flavour that the compound effect of pre-existing health does actually have a negative impact on your trajectory following a transport accident. So the graph shows the number of pre-existing health health considerations along the bottom and people's perception about how much they had improved or got worse at the time to interview. So 6 months post-accident compared back to their pre-existing health conditions, and you can see a very clear trend there. People with multiple health conditions were less positive about improvements that had happened in their health over time. Okay. Another really interesting thing we looked at early on was looking at sources of assistance, basically. So we're quite curious to find out who needs help when dealing with the TAC and who people go to for that help. A significant proportion don't need any help when they're dealing with the TAC, which was quite a nice finding. So around about 40% of clients indicated they didn't need any help. But some did. Most people who sought help went to people like a spouse, a family member, or a trusted advisor, a healthcare practitioner. But some clients went to see a solicitor. And we were really quite interested to find out who was going to see solicitors early on. And these two graphs give you a little bit of a flavour of the analysis we conducted to unpack that. So the graphs show solicitor engagement at the six-month mark post-accident by, I guess, what we could call certain vulnerabilities. So we looked at people's recovery expectations. We looked at whether or not they were reporting anxiety or depression. We looked at their cognitive ability and also their levels of resilience. And just because I've had the second bell, I'll be really quick and just summarise. People who are struggling with some of these vulnerabilities reported much higher levels of early solicitor engagement. You can see that in the two far bars of both graphs there. We were quite concerned about this because we think that's probably a space that we need to be filling. When we ask clients their reasons for seeking assistance from a lawyer, many of the comments are around just being in unfamiliar territory. I just needed some help. This is really confusing. And we don't really think, we at the TAC don't really think that should be the case. Okay. Life Back on Track, this is a really important measure that the TAC has developed as a tailored measure. It's effectively a summary measure that really works extremely well across the multiple diverse range of outcome measures that we have in our study. And we've sort of proven the statistical validity of this using principal components analysis and looking at all the variability across all these, you know, intricate, different, complex outcome measures and how that works in contrast to our Life Back on Track measure. I've given you the wording there. We think this is a pretty powerful measure, and it's becoming increasingly important at the TAC as effectively an ultimate measure of a client's recovery post-accident. There's quite a bit more detail in the paper, so I won't dwell on it here. Again, this is This is a difficult subject to summarise in the limited time that we now have available. But one of the other pieces of early insight that we looked at with the study data was to try and find out about mental health and actually persistent pain vulnerability. I'm not sure if people in the room are familiar with the work of Associate Professor Megan O'Donnell. For those of you who don't know Megan, she's the Director of the research at the Australian Centre for Post-Traumatic Mental Health and the Associate Professor of the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Melbourne. Megan O'Donnell and some of her colleagues a few years ago had developed a predictive screening tool for PTSD and depression following traumatic injury, which was administered in a hospital environment fairly early on after admission, and was a really, really powerful way of identifying risk for subsequent poor recovery in terms of PTSD and depression. And to cut a very long story short, the TAC thought this was a pretty powerful tool, and we really wanted to know if we could actually take this and apply it in our own context. So we mapped a lot of our study content against the different factors that O'Donnell had identified. We found some very strong similarities and some differences, which weren't unexpected because of the different population. But again, to cut a long story short, we emerged from this piece of analysis with two really key predictors of outcomes, one being cognition, so whether or not the client was having difficulty processing information, remembering, concentrating, and the other was resilience, so whether or not the client was having difficulty bouncing back after the accident. What that classification enabled us to do was really to group our population into three broad groups. One group, the majority, 50% approximately, where we probably didn't have any potential issues going on from a mental health perspective. A group where there was possibly medium risk, and a group where we really needed to be alert and make sure we were actively managing clients in that particular area. And this is just a selection of some of the outcome variables that we have in the study that we then took those three broad groups and crossed all the different outcome variables by. And you can see quite clearly the trend that's displayed there. People in the high risk vulnerability group really did report poor outcomes across a number of different variables. And they were really struggling post-accident. These particular variables are taken at the six-month post-accident time point, but this cognition and resilience framework really helps predict across the entire life of claim journey that the study has covered. So clearly you can see not able to get life back on track, pain is an enormous issue, a lot of travel anxiety and really poor return to work outcomes. So really quickly, just to finish up my part of the... I do apologise for taking far too long. We did further analysis and we supplemented the cognition and resilience components of our analysis with two more variables, so our life back on track measure and also the likelihood of pain becoming persistent, which enabled us to really to sort of refine our groupings into four groups, not three, which gave us a level of granularity that we didn't have before. And I guess it begs the question at the moment for us at the TAC whether we can actually translate this particular approach, this analysis, into claims management practice so we can really identify clients that might be in real need of additional help and assistance.
Thanks, Nina. I think we've run out of time. We're probably a little bit over time, so unfortunately no time for questions. But if you could join with me to thank Nina and David, and I think we have a bottle of wine. I'll let you guys work out which one.